Good afternoon, everyone. Allison Skaberg here with Consolidated Planning Group. I'm bringing to you another webinar. Today, we're super excited to be here with Anna Esparza and Dr. Antonio Pagan. And we are going to be discussing the topic transition to adulthood and autism. And they've got a lot of wonderful slides for us today. We talk about transition a lot, but we've actually never done this topic. So if you are joining us for the first time for one of these webinars, we are glad you're here and you are in the right place. We put out a series of webinars every single week surrounding topics on planning for a loved one with a disability. You name it, the topic has probably been discussed, everything from transitioning, public benefits, Medicaid waivers, you name it, it's out there. And they all live on our Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel. So there are over 400 webinars on that YouTube channel. And that was actually born out of my own frustration. I myself am a parent to adult kids with disabilities. And even though we eat, sleep, and breathe this, I felt that it was difficult transitioning. I felt like it was unnecessarily difficult transitioning, even knowing what I know. So that YouTube channel was born. So do check that out. You can subscribe to that for free. So Consolidated Planning Group, we are a holistic special needs financial planning firm. We're nationally certified as Social Security advisors, members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. We are domiciled in Texas. We serve clients all throughout the United States, and we are an advisory and consulting firm. People come to us because they want to plan for their loved one with a disability. They want to make sure that they know what's going to happen, what happens when I'm gone, what happens when I can no longer provide the caregiving services that I once did, how and when should I apply for public benefits, what do I need to do to preserve the eligibility for those public benefits that I worked so hard to get for my loved one. So we do a lot of talking about those things. We help people set up lifetime care plans, protection plans, set up ABLE accounts, and of course we do a lot of advocacy. And if you've listened once, you've heard me say it, I'll say it every single time, when it comes to planning for a loved one with a disability, your life is special. It is specialized, and it is important that you work with the right people, you have the right people on your team and working with the specialist. And that comes to legal documents, that comes to the financial and having money in the right buckets to preserve their eligibility. It comes down to the care team, and I know you guys are going to talk some of that. The word transition is such a broad word, and it covers so many aspects of an individual's life. So we're just, Consolidated Planning Group is just one component, on the financial side of making sure that we have enough money and the right amount to fund a special needs trust, and to make sure that your wishes are carried out the way that you want them to be when you can no longer communicate those wishes for your loved one. So having said that, we are super excited to be here with you today. Everybody is in webinar mode today, and I always like to mention that because that means that we can't see you or hear you. Somebody's probably like, whew. But we actually do know you're here, and we're glad that you're here. We invite you to put your questions in the chat box today. This is being recorded. Everybody is going to get a copy of today's slides and a link to the recording via email, the email that you signed up with. If you are listening to this on podcast and you would like a copy of today's slides, please just email us at contact@cpgcares.net. That's contact@cpgcares.net, and we will be happy to provide those slides. So having said that, I'm going to turn it over to the two of you, and everybody feel free to put your questions in the chat box today, okay?
Thank you so much, Allison. We're so grateful to be here with you all. Like Allison mentioned, we're really here because this is a passion, I think, for both Anna and I in terms of reaching the community and helping young adults transition to adulthood. We will talk a little bit about something called the service cliff, which maybe you've heard about before or have already experienced, which is it really is difficult once your young adult graduates high school to connect with resources. And so today we're going to talk about what you can be doing and how you can be planning for those types of things. But first, I want to introduce myself and the team. I am the principal investigator on a few studies here at the University of Texas Health Science Center, Houston. I am a licensed clinical psychologist. So what that means is I work with individuals with neurodevelopmental disabilities like autism and ADHD all across the lifespan, which with a specific focus on how we can adapt interventions to help people during special periods of time and underserved groups. So we also work with Latinos and military families. And we also work with a few other collaborators like Dr. Hughes and Dr. Loveland. And in addition to that, we have the special privilege of our community lead community health worker, Anna Esparza, working with us. So I'll allow her to introduce herself as well.
Good afternoon to everyone, and thank you so much for having us on this afternoon. For me, it's an honor and a privilege to work with such a passionate group of individuals. Dr. Antonio Pagan is definitely passionate about working with our community, and we're going to talk about our program as well as the transitioning to adulthood.
Absolutely. We also have community partners who work with us. So one of the things that we've emphasized when we've been working on this program and been sort of working in our department is that we really want to make sure that what we're doing is made by and for the community. So we have community partners and a community advisory board. We've also started a youth advocacy board that Anna spearheaded, which will be and include young adults with autism to help direct us on how we can be developing programs that match the needs of these young adults as they're transitioning to adulthood. We have Gisela Esteva, Liliana Pagan, Stephen Armstrong, and Carrie Richardson, who help us and work with us in various capacities, and we're so grateful to have them. So the objectives of today is we really want to talk a little bit about the unique challenges of the transition to adulthood for young adults. And I saw in the chat that someone had mentioned, you know, what if you've already been pushed off this cliff? Well, this is for you as well. We want this to be a helpful opportunity and a starting point for those who are preparing for the cliff, but also those who have already experienced it. We want to tell you a little bit about the challenges of the transition to adulthood for young adults with autism, the parents and community providers, and pinpoint specific treatment targets that would be and could be helpful. And then we're going to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing. How have we been addressing these needs in the community? So we're going to tell you a little bit about our launching to adulthood programs and the cultural adaptations that we've done for Latinos in the military community. And then we'll tell you a little bit about some of the resources that are available for you and your family, as well as answer some questions. So let me tell you a little bit about the transition to adulthood in general. So the way that we've described it in research, in the science, is that this typically includes this period from 18 to 25 years old. The reason why is we know there's a lot of developmental maturation that's happening in the brain during this time. In addition, societally, there's progression and expectations that young adults will make towards certain important areas. So, for example, we have expectations that on a societal basis that these young adults will make progress toward educational and vocational goals, that they will start thinking about ways in which they want to grow, whether it be pursuing a degree or a trade school, or whether or not they want to start working full-time in some industry. In addition, young adults are expected to begin attending to their physical and mental health needs. And so that includes them having to step up and manage their own physical appointments with doctors and attending to and identifying their mental health needs. However, this is not always easy. And so we're going to talk about on the next slide a little bit about what can happen when a young adult has autism. So autism spectrum is sort of the way that we conceptualize it in the Diagnostic Statistics Manual from the American Psychological Association is that it's a neurodevelopmental condition or difference that's marked by two important categories. The first is differences in social communication and interaction, and the second area is the presence of restricted and repetitive patterns of behaviors and interests. And those also can be focused interests. These can make it very difficult then to attend to those specific areas of transition that we talked about earlier. If I need to start thinking about my vocation, maybe it's difficult to do that if I have social communication and interaction difficulties. So researchers and clinicians have focused on early identification and treatment of autism, which has been an incredible feat in this domain. But there's really little work that's focused on adults, including the critical period of the transition to adulthood. So I'm going to hand it off to Anna to tell us a little bit about what she has seen and experienced and what some of the research has shown us on what happens when these young adults transition to adulthood. And then I'll tell you a little bit about what we have been doing in our program.
As we know, the young adults falling off that service cliff that we often talk about, we know that only one in three have attended college. Less than two-thirds have had a job for pay, and most have had low-paying jobs. We see this oftentimes with the individuals that we're working with. They tell us about the experiences that they've had in the workplace. Some of them have had jobs, some have interviewed for jobs but don't make the job. And so they're not hired. Very highly intelligent young adults, but having difficulty living independently. Some have speech language impairments, learning disabilities up to 80%. We know that from research, community and social participation is low compared with their same age peers. And this is oftentimes our young adults will express to us that they want to have friends, that they want to have opportunities that other young adults have in their communities. And they have told us that they feel that they need those skills to be able to participate. We know that the services that they're receiving, they're low compared with other groups of disabilities. Co-occurring conditions. A lot of our young adults have a diagnosis of depression or anxiety, and they express this to us as well, and they struggle. Almost half have been victims of bullying, and this is a topic that is often shared with our young adults. Not only being bullied at school, but also being bullied in the workplace, because sometimes they don't have the skills, the social skills to even defend themselves in situations, or sometimes they don't understand the social situation. So we've seen this about the young adults falling off that service cliff. And our program is focused on helping our young adults so that they have those skills to be able to navigate after high school and beyond. So why are young adults with autism, they're not transitioning to adulthood like their peers? What are some of those challenges? As we know, they may be very highly intelligent, but they may have basic activities such as holding those conversations, the task of daily self-care. We know that some are super intelligent, but they have difficulty with self-care. Some have revealed that that it's difficult for them with self-care, setting goals. And making carrying out realistic plans to reach those goals. When talking with some of our young adults, there was one that expressed that he has difficulty with deadlines, that he's very good in school, and he's in a college program, but keeping up with those deadlines is a challenge for him. Handling multiple and changing demands in their environment, regulating their emotions. And sometimes some of our young adults also have those sensory issues that they deal with. Being aware and understanding the responses to their behavior. Why do certain people act certain ways? Because the behavior can't be regulated. Driving a car. There are young adults that struggle with that. Some may be ready, and some it may not even be on their radar. And asking for help. I remember a young adult telling me that it was very difficult for him to ask for help. And he ended up moving back home because when he was in college, he had a difficult time asking for help. So these are the things that we're seeing with our young adults, and the barriers to why they're not transitioning like their adult peers. We also see that there are those co-occurring mental health conditions, the depression, the anxiety, the attention deficit disorder. It makes it very challenging for our young adults. They have those problems adjusting socially, educationally, we see it, and they're lonely. A lot of them will express to you that they feel very lonely, because of these challenges. However, most of the group treatments that we focus on are social skills. And what we've seen is that they rarely focus on those co-occurring mental health conditions or the inclusion of those support systems. Some of the societal barriers to transitioning are that transition services are not provided or inadequate. And sometimes it takes forever to even get a response, sometimes from agencies that are working with those transition services. Society is not aware that people with autism can be successful and they can be the best employees and they can be contributing members of society. The supports that are in place, such as educational systems, behavioral programs, mental health, and residential programs, sometimes they don't coordinate well. We're not all on the same page. The supports are often provided only for children, and we see that as adults, as our young adults get older, the services sometimes is very difficult to find for our young adults. And then we know that few professionals are trained to work with adults with autism. And it's something that we always stress to our families is that when you do find a provider, make sure that they have been trained to work with young adults with autism. So those are some of the societal barriers to transitioning, as well as there's not enough research on the needs of adults or evidence-based practices. Some of the challenges that we see for families of young adults are parents of young adults with autism can feel very frustrated by lack of progress. We find that young adults and adolescents with autism, they're usually functioning 5 to 7 years younger in the social emotional domain than their chronological age. And that's something that's often brought up. Sometimes parents want their children to be dating, and sometimes it's not even on their radar. They're not emotionally ready for that. And some will be, and some may not ever be emotionally ready for that. We know that from research that they're functioning on that 5 to 7 years younger area. Families often are distressed by social withdrawal and other signs of mental health problems. This is something that our families will tell us that they notice their young adults being withdrawn. And youth who did well in high school may not do well in higher education. They may not be able to handle higher education. The topic of employment, that's a big one. It can be difficult and discouraging for young adults to remain at home and not working. Many of our young adults share with us the frustration about not being able to find work. Or some have found work, but it's not something that they're very interested in. It's not meaningful to them. I know of a young adult that he's been always doing heavy work and he wants to do something else. And so it's very frustrating for him to be doing heavy work when he wants to be doing something in a field where he's very interested and passionate about. And our experience suggests a longer trajectory of transition to adult life is very common. Also, sometimes there's conflict in the home. There may be divorce, or sometimes both parents are not on the same page when it comes to advocating or even understanding what autism is. Sometimes one parent is very well informed and the other parent is not. And that can be a barrier, for advocating for services for our young adults. Language barriers and immigrant status. We see this very often in our group. The language barrier of looking for services and then not dominating the language and making it very difficult to navigate the system. Poverty as well. Abuse and neglect, and other traumatic experiences. We've seen this in working with our families, over-supporting of the young adult, doing everything for that young adult and not helping them to become independent is a big barrier. And it's seen a lot within our community. The lack of knowledge of services. There are families that we've come across that they don't even know that there is the med waiver list, the interest list. Don't know about the local LIDAs, or other resources within the community. And also the unhelpful communication styles. These are all barriers that families have when transitioning. So what helps? What are we seeing that is being so effective with our young adults? Absolutely, the treatment of co-occurring mental disorders, that individual therapy, that coaching of that young adult. We have that feedback from our young adults that this has been very helpful for them, that they can use the tools that are being taught within these individual therapies and can implement them for change, creating those SMART goals. That group therapy, not only that individual therapy, but also coming together, listening to other young adults on what their challenges are, what strategies are they using, what's being helpful for them in a group therapy where everyone is listening and giving feedback. That social skills interventions. Oftentimes and many times, our young adults are talking about those social skills. How can I be more sociable? What can I do? What's going to help me to make friends, to be able to talk to more people at work? That social support. We've seen that social support is within our group is very positive. That family education about barriers and supports to independence. We talk to our families about what are those barriers? How can we overcome those barriers? What are those strategies that are going to be effective for our young adults to be more independent? Letting go, letting them, putting them in the driver's seat. Also, what are those community opportunities? What's out there? What are the resources out in our community in education and work? Those are all the things that have been effective and that we've seen that work, within the feedback that we've gotten from our families.
Anna, I know that you and I were talking a little bit before this started today, and one of the things that you said, it was kind of like, the parent not over-parenting and over-protecting, which you spend 18 years, okay, being the parent that tells them what to do, when to do, how to do it, and they take your suggestions, especially when they're little. They really like you when they're little, and then they get a little bit older, and they don't think you're as smart as you once were, and things like that. But I think one of the things that you said that just really hits home for me, because having kids in these ages, it's actually coaching for yourself, or getting whatever therapy or coaching on how to be the best parent to your adult kids. I did that, and I have to say, no shame in that. It was so helpful. I was struggling to not be the mom that I had always been for 18 years. And I really had to practice personally on words like, well, how's that working out for you? What could you have done differently? I'm sorry you're having a bad day. Instead of fixing everything, I'm sorry you're having a bad day. What could you do to turn it around? Like putting it back to them and letting them problem solve. Because I realized personally that I was not helping problem solving everything. And I truly just had to help myself to be that for them. It's a different stage, different season in life. And I think that that was just as hard as a parent as going through some of these things that our kids are going through. And it is definitely a family thing.
Absolutely. And it's tough as an adult, as a parent also to kind of let go. But it's something that we're seeing within our groups that the parents will say, it's really difficult for me to kind of let go and give them to let them be in charge of their life, because we've always been advocating for them. So that's what we're seeing, that support system as well, and giving our families the tools so that they can have, they can slowly let go. And it's tough. I'm a parent as well, of young adults that are transitioning. So
Well, I
Definitely.
also think of, you know, we all make mistakes, neurotypical or not, okay? Growing up and transitioning into adulthood, we all made mistakes. And so I think positively of let them fail forward. They can't learn from mistakes if they never make them. We have so much knowledge now because we've been around the block for a while. We made a lot of mistakes along the way. And clearly, we don't want our kids to make those same mistakes, but they have to. And it's
Absolutely.
not the end of the world. But I always think a little bit of failure here and there moves people towards success. Because, you know, I always talk about tomorrow is a new day. We get a do-over. Today was bad. Well, tomorrow's new. And so I think the failing forward is a real thing as well.
I agree with that, absolutely. So what are we doing in our program? We're addressing those gaps. The UT Health Lifespan Autism Center provides expert evidence-based clinical services to individuals with autism or other neurodiversity across the lifespan. That center is there to develop better interventions for the needs of people with autism, prepares them for the next generation of clinicians and researchers through education, training, and career development, provide advocacy for issues of concern for our community of people with autism, outreach to individuals with autism and their families that are underserved in our community. Also, there's expert clinical consultation to health providers to help individuals with autism and their families receive the best care. It includes individuals with autism as partners in research and consultants on clinical services and other services that the center provides. We always want to have that input from individuals that are on the spectrum because that's going to help us improve our services. What is the Launching to Adulthood program? It's a 12-group therapy sessions. They're virtual. There are 10 individual therapy sessions virtually, those coaching sessions that I had talked about with our young adults. Then we have those parent group sessions, the focus on those parenting skills, learning about autism. A lot of our families sometimes have questions about autism, about attention deficit disorder. How does it impact their young adult? How they can support their transition-aged young adults transitioning to that independent life that also Allison was talking about, helping them prepare. And those parent groups are, it's a big support group because we hear from everyone within that group. The young adult sessions, they focus on those social skills, the executive functioning abilities, and skills to manage mental health, anxiety, depression, and stress. The Launching to Adulthood program, there is a program that is covered by the health insurance. And then we have the Iniciando la Adultez for Latinos with the Spanish-speaking parents. And then they receive gift cards for the questionnaires and assessments that we provide them because that's going to help our program. We also have the Military Adapted Launching to Adulthood program that Dr. Antonio was talking about. And they earn gift cards for those assessments. We're constantly getting feedback from our participants in the program. That's going to help us to improve our program and also to tailor it to the families and the young adults that we're serving.
So I'd like to just summarize. So basically, this is a study. You guys have study funding for this, but part of the study, then you do have these group sessions so people can sign up to be involved and grow. Parents are growing, the young adult is growing and learning, transition tips. But they are also compensated for their time through way of gift cards or and travel expense, that type of thing through the gift cards. Is that basically how it works? And is there a waiting list? This sounds fantastic. We haven't done this before. We haven't put this out there to our families in the past. How can they get going? How could they get started on this?
The
These are
contact
really,
information. Go ahead, Dr. Antonio.
yeah, we Those are really good questions, Allison. We've essentially this program, the one that we offer, the research studies are specifically for the Latinos in the military group, but the general program is available to anybody. And that is through that one's billed through insurance. And so we do have a pretty long wait list for that one. The research ones do not have as long of a wait list because they're more highly sought, I think, and we're able to kind of turn those around quicker. Which has been awesome. The age range, which we're going to talk about, I saw a question in the chat. It is for those who are 18 to 25, just because that's kind of the focus of the program. Our hope in the future is to develop a similar program that essentially prepares young adults for autism or for adulthood, and that one being more focused on a high school range. So as of now, the way that you described it is perfect. That's ex essentially what we do. And through that, we're able to through by participants filling out questionnaires and answering these questions, it helps us to determine we personalize the treatment to their needs. We're able to assess whether or not they are improving and if there are areas that we can improve the program based on that. And then it also helps us to give funders information on how the program is helping people's lives so that we can continue to offer it for free, for those specific groups.
I'm reminded, and because I've always been a fan of research, and I'm reminded that doctors practice medicine, and the research and learning. I mean, that's why, things that, diagnoses or things in the past that were once, terrible. There's nothing we can do. There's cures for and things like that, and better ideas of management of diagnoses and other things like that, and how people can have a fulfilling life despite a diagnosis that it doesn't define exactly who they are. So I really do, I love that. But I also know from a, from a parent perspective, so if I'm on here right now and I'm thinking, oh, this is awesome, I'm gonna get involved, and the waiting list is really long for the group that I would fit into. Do you guys have resources or lists of other programs that might have availability for other families that may be able to get into sooner than the waiting list? Because people are attending here today because this is front of mind, transitioning into adulthood. They're feeling the 5 to 7 years behind the peers and feeling or like a failure from time to time. It's all things that parents have felt. So how do we get involved in something else if
Yeah, those are good questions. I think overall, we're going to provide a list of resources that will attend to a number of things. The first is that oftentimes young adults need individual therapy to attend to co-occurring mental health needs like anxiety and depression. In addition, they might need support from the community, whether it be Texas Workforce Commission or other areas. And so that's a focus that we attend to as well. The unique aspect of our program is that we combine this approach where we have parents pr being provided with a group therapy, young adults being provided with a group therapy, and then young adults getting these coaching sessions. And that in and of itself is very unique to our program, and doesn't match up to a lot of what is available in the community, unfortunately. So that's what gave us the onus and the motivation to start this program, and hopefully for it to continue moving forward. So the general information about the groups, this is kind of the overview of the program. So basically it's a 12-week program. We have these webinars similar to what we're doing today on Saturdays, where we'll meet with young adults and parents and different programs around the community will actually present specifically for the transition to adulthood. And this group is offered virtually. So we will start with a combined parent and young adult group. It's in person, but only for the Spanish group. Everything else is virtual. And then young adults and parents will actually have a family session. And this kind of speaks to Allison's point from earlier, which is oftentimes parents are needing to learn a little bit about where they need to decrease their support if they are oversupporting. And in other instances, parents need to learn where they need to support more. So what we do is we focus the program on the family. So the first week and the 6th week and then the last week, we actually have family sessions where young adults will meet with their coach and with their parents, and they'll talk about here are the goals that the young adult has. How can you support them by either allowing them to do more on their own, or supporting them in another way, and allowing them and scaffolding them into the opportunity for them to succeed. And then, as we mentioned, they'll complete some questionnaires. Then between weeks 2 and 5, parents and young adults will separate. So parents will have their own groups virtually, young adults will have their own virtually, and then the young adults will also have their individual coaching sessions. And then we meet again together at the midway point, or at week 6, and then the same process for weeks 7 through 11 with our final sessions at week 12. So this structure really allows us to make sure that we're weaving together the needs of parents with their young adults and allowing for young adults to start to develop their own independence toward those goals. So just kind of an overview of the program. Like I mentioned, we kind of take a neurodiversity approach. So neurodiversity essentially believes that young adults with autism, individuals with autism, ADHD, experience neurodevelopmental differences in their brains that actually change how they view and interact with the world. Thus, it's not that they have a disorder in the sense that we need to cure it or change it, like if you are experiencing depression or anxiety, but instead that we need to provide them with skills that are adapted to the way that they interact with the world, and we need to learn to accept that they view the world in a different way. And this is often a conversation that Anna has with the parents, which is when parents have a strong desire for their young adults to socialize more, which comes from a very noble perspective, and that is loneliness can be a very negative experience for any adult. And interacting with others is important. However, if that goal begins to overshadow the relationship that the parent has with the young adult, then it creates a barrier for them to support one another during this transition period. So our focus is helping them reach their full potential during the transition to adulthood and provide supports during this for parents during this transition period. So generally, just in terms of what we do in our groups, like I mentioned, these are virtual, typically around 60 to 90 minutes, and parents or young adults will separate. These are scheduled typically based on best availability, and these allow us to provide these topics to the parents and young adults in this virtual format. And group therapy overall can be a really helpful strategy that you might consider as you think about what intervention your young adult needs during this transition period.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Are the services that you provide, I understand that you're with UT Health, are they only for Texans or do you take out of state applicants?
Yeah, as of now, we don't have a license for other states, so we are just serving Texas, and a part of that is because virtual services typically don't allow us to serve those outside, just because it is a psychological service. So as of now, yeah, we're just serving Texas.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So then, like I mentioned, we also offer these webinars to families so that they can learn more about important topics. So, for example, we've had Disability Rights of Texas come present and talk a little bit about, okay, what are the differences between guardianship? Do I really need guardianship, or can I just pursue something like supported decision making? And Disability Rights of Texas really focuses on that idea that every young adult with a difference or a disability or neurodevelopmental difference, it has some area of their life that they can have some control over. And so supported decision-making agreements might be a better approach so that the young adult remains and still has in their ability a level of autonomy. We also will have different people from the university come present and talk a little bit about what are some of the disability resources available at universities. We've had self-advocacy groups come present, relationships, finances, ABLE accounts, which I know consolidated planning really focuses on. These are areas that we know are important for the transition to adulthood. And we're also obviously very interested in how we can focus on connecting families with those resources. And I see a mention, a question about Texas workforce. And Anna has developed a very strong connection with Texas workforce Commission. We've met with them to provide VR counselors and connect them with VR counselors at Texas Workforce Commission. I think one of our challenges is just making sure that that is a quick process. It tends to get slowed down significantly. That's not because I know that they don't want to provide the services. I think they're just overwhelmed just because a lot of people need them. So that's something that we definitely focus on trying to connect families with. Anna spends a lot of time on individualizing those letters so that we can make sure that it gets to the right VR counselor. And so that's a big focus for us as well.
I just want to mention that if you're hearing about vocational rehab or the Texas Workforce Commission for the first time today, we do have many webinars on our YouTube channel about this, explaining how it works. But vocational rehab is a service that's state and federally funded. They have deep pockets, and it's designed for an individual who has an impediment to employment. They do vocational evaluations, they do various trainings, they put basically a work plan in place in various situations. There's job coaches, there's summer programs, there's a lot of different things. So if you've never heard of this, do check that out. It's the vocational rehab. Most of your public high schools and private high schools have a VR counselor, so you might be able to connect to VR that way. You can self-refer yourself right on the internet by Start My VR. So that's another place, but do check that out. And then as it relates to your webinars, so even if a person is on the waiting list for the program, I am assuming that anybody is welcome to attend these webinars that are held on Saturdays. Is that correct?
Absolutely. They can reach out to us. Anna and I try our best to get this information out to all our families. Our focus obviously is first serving the families that are a part of our program to make sure that we're reaching their needs, and then allowing those who might specifically fit what we're doing to join as well. So those on our waiting list definitely would qualify.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. We also have another huge focus for us has been on social events. So this has been an area, yeah, and they are bilingual. Thank you for clarifying that, Anna, because we do make sure that the first 45 minutes are in English and the second 45 in Spanish. We also have in-person social events. So this has been an area for us that we've really been challenged by, because on the one hand, parents, like I mentioned, are very keen on young adults socializing, which again, we understand completely because we want our young adults to socialize. However, when we're talking about a neurodiverse set of young adults who struggle with connecting socially, this is an area where they, one, often do not have what we call social motivation. So whenever I'm motivated to do something, let's say I have a desire to eat, I might start experiencing some internal pain right in my stomach as I start to realize it's been a while since I ate lunch. Maybe you right now are preparing lunch or you are getting ready to eat your lunch or already have. You notice that there's a significant difference in when you are experiencing that pain and desire to eat compared to after you eat. So the difference though is someone with autism does not experience that same motivation and interest in socializing as others do. Now, one of the things that we focus on is that young adults with autism all are different. So the variations that they experience are inter-individually different. So I might, let's say, I interact with a young adult who has autism, but he actually it does not have those difficulties socializing and actually is excited to socialize. Yet he still could meet criteria because he has difficulties in other domains that are still related to the diagnoses. So, as a result, we have focused on making sure that we have these events as an opportunity and as a possibility for those who are interested. And for those who might not be interested, we want to make sure that we're tailoring these to match their needs. So, Anna has worked with the young adults to develop a youth advisory board where these young adults get together and they will work with us to tell us how to develop these social events. And what we encourage parents is that have patience with your young adult. They may not be excited to focus on or engage socially with others, but walk them through what it's like as an adult to get a social group together, even when they're young. We even talk about this when it comes to your IEP transition meetings. These were mandated before by the IDEA board to be at 16 years old. Now they're mandated to be at 14 years old. During these meetings, the idea is that you begin to scaffold your young adult or your teen into beginning to make decisions for themselves. And socialization is an area where you can do this even now. You can begin to explain to them what is it like having to get a social activity together. When I want to go grab coffee with a friend, what are the steps that I have to do that? And why is it helpful? What about this socialization aspect nourishes my soul, is helpful for me in reaching my goals? What if I need advice from somebody and I'm an adult and now I don't have my teacher to talk to, I don't have as many friends, I'm not around them every day. Well, connecting with people socially can help us reach those goals and make sure that we're still progressing, but we have that support. So we really encourage parents to be doing this even now. So our coaching sessions, this is a pinnacle and a pillar of our program. And I want to tell you a little bit about it and what we do. So specifically, we meet virtually with these young adults weekly for around 30 to 45 minutes. Now, a typical psychotherapy session is around 50 minutes or less. So our focus here, when we make them shorter, is to make sure that the sessions are very focused on goal setting, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. These are scheduled based on the availability of the coach and the young adult. And the structure, like I mentioned, is first a family session because this allows us to make sure that the goals that the young adult is developing match up with what the parent is seeing as an area of need. Now, again, we balance this because there is no perfect scenario. A parent may want one thing and a young adult may want something else. However, we try to balance this by making sure that the young adult and the parent have developed this line of communication and that we can be in agreement on these goals. And so they also are provided this opportunity to integrate the skills that they're taught from their group in these individual sessions. So let me tell you a little bit about what the forms the basis of this program. And I hope this can be something that you can do with your teens, with your children as well. We use something called motivational interviewing, and this is an evidence-based intervention practice that we use in psychotherapy, specifically coming from very a strong evidence base. So specifically, we focus on two things. The first is self-determination theory. And the idea behind self-determination theory is that I am much more likely to be motivated and complete a task when I am the one that develops that task. So if I'm told by somebody, hey, you need to go take out the trash, versus if I develop a goal of I want to take out the trash before my mom asks me twice a week out of 7 days. That goal now is determined and developed by myself. The second aspect that we focus on by utilizing this motivational interviewing framework is by helping young adults to develop what are called SMART goals. And these are things that I'm sure you've already known about or even subconsciously done on your own. But we specifically focus on helping young adults to develop goals that are SMART. So the first, the acronym stands for specific, which is you define exactly what you're going to do and what you want to pursue. The second is that the goal is measurable and meaningful, meaning that it is something that you can measure. You know how many times you're aiming to do this. And meaningful. So to the question in the chat, there really is no consensus on whether you use identity first language or person first language. Some people in the autism field prefer identity first, such as autistic, while others prefer person first language, person with autism. Both are interchangeable and can be used in either context. We often will talk with families to make sure that we're using the language that meets their needs. So finishing up this acronym, we also focus on making sure that the goals are attainable, realistic, and timely. And so then weekly, we will work with our young adults to make sure that these goals fit with their values and with their long-term goals. So these principles that we use is a guiding rather than directing style. So when you are talking with your young adult, as Allison said, using that self-reflection can be really helpful, right? Okay, so tell me a little bit about what is guiding the decision that you're making there, or what was going through your mind as you were making that decision. So we utilize that style as a way to help young adults make decisions that match up more with their values rather than the person they do not want to be. So we specifically will focus on a collaborative and problem-solving style in these sessions and allow young adults to elicit their own motivation for change. Finally, these sessions focus on what is called change talk from the young adult's own examples and language. So specifically, let's say the young adult says, "You know, I really want to change this and I'm really motivated to change this because I don't like the fact that I don't have independence. I can't drive on my own. I can't go do things on my own. I have to be asking other people." So we utilize those specific areas where we know they have a motivation to build on for their SMART goals. So in terms of autism, motivational interviewing has been adapted for this field, and we've done this in various ways. The first is we've adapted the language level of it, used concrete language, made sure that we start questions with query words, and avoid starting with the word why. We also provide them with ample time for them to respond, and if they don't understand the question, try to rephrase it or explain it in a different way. And if they have a difficult time answering, giving them possible answers to choose from. And you can use these right now with your teens as well. You can use these questions as a way to elicit understanding and help them gain functional changes in certain domains.
So we have a couple of questions out here. The one question says, how successful is the program with PDA persons? Any particular pros or cons of this program with PDA persons?
I'm sorry, so what is PDA?
I am not sure. I was wondering that. So let's see. Somebody put
And
that in the
then,
chat box for us.
okay. And then in terms of the flyer, we'll definitely send that. In terms of the waiting time, so Medicaid is not covered in terms of the insurance, so it would be an out-of-pocket cost. But if you do fit into the Latino or military group, that one would be free. Pathological demand avoidance. Okay, got it. I don't know. Pathological demand avoidance is not something that is included in our DSM-5, so we're not explicitly evaluating PDA. And so that's something that we have not studied. Specifically, we're just focusing on young adults with autism who are intellectually able. So we do have an IQ cutoff of 80 on verbal so that they can engage with the young adults and the parents in the groups.
So you said 80 on verbal. It's not the overall IQ, but 80 on verbal is what you said, correct?
Exactly.
Got
Yep.
it.
Just some other examples of things that you can try. Consistently testing for understanding, helping clients with the organization and structure of their language, summarizing what's discussed, and helping them imagine hypothetical situations. Again, you can use these right now with your teens, and I encourage you to. We're going to send these slides. Allison's going to send these out as well. And then there are certain characteristics of the therapist, and I assume also and imagine that this can be helpful also to be considering as a parent. The first is being trustworthy. So making sure that you yourself are exemplifying the characteristics that you hope your young adult will engage as well. Engagement is another point, another part. How many times when you're talking with them are you on your phone or your mind is elsewhere? That is really important that when you're engaging with them and talking with them, you're having these conversations eye to eye. Even if they're not making eye contact, making sure that your attention is fully with them. Accepting, having empathy, and being honest are all important characteristics that can be helpful whenever you're having these types of conversations with your team.
There was one thing on the previous slide. Do not lengthen sessions past the scheduled
Yes.
time. That is a huge thing. I had to learn that as a parent. Like, more is not more. Less is more. They don't want to hear us rambling. Like nothing going on long and long is good.
Exactly. Yep. Why values and goals is another area that can be really helpful as you start to consider your young adult's transition period, and as you're talking with a young adult about making goals. Whenever we talk about making goals, it's really important for us to have a valued direction. So personal values reflect principles that we use to govern how we ought to behave, the person that we want to be. And so we know that values show robust associations with other individual differences, such as personality traits. So identifying and helping your young adult identify these values can be really helpful as they start to identify and connect with the goals that they want to make as they start to live out the person that they want to be in adulthood. So just in terms of some of the things that we have found, we've done a couple of studies where we've tried to identify how we can adapt this program to meet the needs of the community that we're serving. And so a couple of the areas that we've focused on are cultural differences, assessing services, and some of the suggestions for intervention. This has helped us to make sure that we're tailoring the intervention to match the needs of the community and make sure that we are focusing on areas that are important to them. And these are some of the resources that we're going to share. These are really helpful because they can connect you with services that are available right here in Houston, but also nationally. So we have the Texas Autism Society. Every state has their own autism society that you can connect with as well. Family to Family Network is super helpful as well. The Autism Self-Advocacy Network and the Center for Pursuit. We have a full resource sheet that has a bunch of this information. And if you email me or Anna, we are happy to send that along as well. That sheet in and of itself has a ton of information that we have found that's helpful specifically for those who are here in Texas.
And someone said in the chat box, it seems like the services are for kids that are higher functioning. Are
That's
there
right.
services available out there, or can you help families that maybe their kids don't fit into that box, where there might be help and services or other studies or programs for them to find out for their loved ones?
That is a great question. So what we have found overall is that for those who are who have a lower verbal ability, the best intervention is actually for the parents. So what we encourage parents to do is for themselves to get into individual therapy and start to learn skills that might help them either identify ways to communicate with their young adult, but also ways in which they can learn to manage the stress that goes along with the support that they're having to provide to their young adults. Right now, this is the really unfortunate reality is that there really are not a lot of resources that are available. But yes, we will share the resources page that is available with this. And yeah, I don't know if we have time for questions. I think we have like 3 or 4 minutes, but yeah.
I love what you guys are doing, and I love that you have shared this with us, because we didn't know about this. So everyone today is going to get a copy of today's slides, which is going to have their contact information, how to reach out to them, their website where you can check things out, how to get involved. And you're also going to have a link to the recording. And I know somebody said that there's a lot of parents that they felt could benefit from this, maybe not listening today. This webinar will be on our YouTube channel. And again, feel free to share the recording or share the slides when you get that. I would let's see what we have here. Lots of thank yous. Contact information. Okay. So having said that, I again, we love what you guys are doing, and do keep us if there are additional programs that are coming up. I know Anna, you'll keep us in the loop on all of that. And thank you, Anna, for all the work that you do in this community. Everything that you guys do are doing is making a huge difference, and I do love that. So having said that, here's some additional contact information. Again, everybody's going to get this. This is going to be that QR code that'll take you to their page, so you guys can check that out. And from a time perspective, we're just about out of time for today. As always, we touched on a few things. One thing that you did say earlier is about driving, and it's near and dear to a lot of people's heart. It's scary to a lot of mom and dad hearts. But one thing I will tell you guys, I just want to mention this because a lot of people don't know it exists. There are disability driving schools for kids who have Learning differences. My kids did it. My kids both got their driver's license. It can be done. But if we've got kids that are ADHD or on the autism spectrum or have other neurodiversities, you may want to look into a disability driving school. And if that is what they need to be able to work, it's possible that that disability driving school could be included with VR, with the services through VR. And it's not a slam dunk, it's based off of the individual. But I just wanted to mention, and it may be not at 16. Hey, maybe they're 24 and getting their driver's license, and it is okay. So I just wanted to mention that because that was kind of a game changer for us and how my kids were able to get their driver's license. We've got a lot of upcoming webinars over the next few weeks and months. So this link here will take you to the upcoming webinars, and we'll have very specific topic descriptions so you can see if it's, something that is interesting to you or for the planning journey that you guys are on. As always, we work on a collaborative team here at CPG. We are nationally certified as Social Security advisors, members of the Special Needs Planning Academy, and we stand ready to help you plan for the future. So whether you've done a lot of planning and you would like a second opinion on what do I have in place and is it right, are there any changes that I need to make, or you need to get started, or you're somewhere in between, we can help you. We always offer free personalized consultations. So this QR code will take you to our calendar where you can schedule your free personalized consultation directly on our calendar. So thanks so much, everyone, for being here with us today. Dr. Antonio and Anna, thank you for being here with us today. Wonderful information, and we'll look forward to partnering with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.